Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. This week you'll find me and Ed Stocker, our America's editor-at-large, now there's a good title, in Los Angeles for the Urban Mobility Conference, LA Commotion. It'll be fun. I'll organise scooters for everyone. Whoa. We'll discover how the LAPD is chasing down the city's baddies on e-bikes made by German brand Bosch. We'll hear from the architecture firm that's asked a simple question. What could LA become if it got rid of its overabundance of car parking? The answer? Well, sorry, but you'll just have to keep listening. Oh, and there'll be a report on California revving up for high-speed rail. And you'll get to meet the French company that's hoping to bring together a multitude of rides in a seamless package. That's all coming up right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. Oh, and Mr. Stocker.
Really?
Uh-oh.
So welcome to this week's programme. E-bikes have been a popular way to get around in Germany and Switzerland for years, but battery-boosted bikes have been a slower burn in the US. But now, all the key players are betting on a change in both consumer attitudes, i.e., can I look cool on an e-bike, and the views of lawmakers. That's because many states see them as motorized vehicles and refuse to let them on their streets. But that is changing. Germany's Bosch is one of the companies that set up in the US hoping to race ahead. And they have a hard-to-please new client, LA's cops. Claudia Wasco is vice president and general manager of Bosch e-bike systems, and she gave me the lowdown.
The LAPD is definitely the most popular police department, which just recently added Bosch-equipped e-bikes, actually speed pedelecs, which support up to 28 miles per hour, to their fleet. And we really hope that the LAPD department, as a trend-setting department, will have an impact, a positive impact on other departments adding bikes to their fleet as well. There are at least 8 other police departments throughout the country which just recently added Bosch e-bikes to their fleet. So we started pitching this project last year, and we are very happy that now we have about 8 police departments using the bikes. And we just recently talked to the LAPD, and they are very, very happy with the bikes because, first of all, they really like to get engaged with the community. So on an e-bike, people are asking them, what is that? What is that? So they really enjoy being close to the community. And of course, an e-bike just flattens hills, it shrinks distances. So with an e-bike, they are still energized when they reach their target, when they are, for example, following a thief. So they are faster to get them, they are increasing the patrol range, and they are still energized to be aware of the situation. So just positive effects.
And tell me, are there any challenges? Obviously, the one thing about e-bikes is they do have to be recharged every now and then. So for a police force, do they have to be careful about that?
You're absolutely right. Of course, you need to charge an e-bike once in a while. But with the Bosch system, which is a very, very efficient system, you can easily overcome 60 miles per day. And it takes just 2 hours to really get back the energy to the battery, so this should not be an issue. And also you can, of course, have other batteries in place, fully charged batteries, and exchange them during lunchtime, for example. So,
returning to the police and their chasing down of various robbers and other undesirable people, is that a good piece of publicity? Not that that's the reason you're doing it, but is that a good piece of branding for you in the city, that people begin to see these bikes and understand they're quick, they're nimble? How important is that for you telling your story to the likes of Los Angeles?
100%, different reasons, but you're absolutely right. I mean, in the end, the amount of bikes which we are providing to these departments is not that huge, but the impact is huge. So first of all, it's all about visibility. So one reason why the US market is not on the same level as Europe, for example, is that this technology, this two-wheel technology, is just not being known here. And awareness and visibility for this category is really key. So a police officer on an e-bike now is, of course, a great device to create awareness and visibility for this category. And then especially a police officer is, for me, a very, very reliable person, and if a police department rides this bike, then for me it's just a proof that this must be something safe, something smart, something cost efficient, time efficient. Yeah, it has for us definitely a promoting aspect as well.
Claudia Wasco there, Vice President and General Manager of Bosch E-Bike Systems. And this is The Urbanist, powered up and ready to roll. What could San Francisco look like if it got rid of most of its car lots? Well, that's a fantasy project that the global architecture practice Woods Bagot explored for LA Commotion. I caught up with James Sanders, who told us how LA could become a lot nicer by ditching those lots and regaining the space equivalent to two Manhattans. Let's get James to tell us all about his vision.
As part of this study, which was carried out by Woods Bagot, they did a map of every surface parking lot in Los Angeles, in the metropolitan area of Los Angeles, over 5,000 square feet on grade, so nothing below and nothing above. And they came up with something like 46 square miles of parking in the core area of metropolitan Los Angeles, which, as a New Yorker, inevitably I think of as two times the size of Manhattan.
Now, what are they doing in the city to begin to control that in reality? Because we heard today from Mayor Garcetti that actually they are trying to move towards a public transport world. But there's also this interesting rule that's still in place, isn't there, that you have to have two places for cars for every apartment you build. How far back does that legislation go?
Well, that goes not surprisingly to about the time of World War II, when the city had really made a sort of decisive move toward the private automobile. And they thought, well, we're going to have all these private automobiles. We don't want them parking on the street. We're going to mandate that developers and builders and anyone building a house or an apartment house has to provide two spaces per unit because you need a car to get around Los Angeles. Now, that, of course, became a self-fulfilling prophecy because once you did have those spaces, it just became too easy to have a car. And plans for a public transit system stalled, and the old streetcar system fell apart. But there's been a radical change in the last 10 years, 15 years, and now in the last few years. The low end of the 15 years is that a massive mass transit system is being built here, the largest in the United States since New York City finished its system around 1940. It's extraordinary. And the second, of course, is everything at this conference that we're discussing, the mobility revolution of Uber and Lyft and e-scooters and e-bikes and autonomous vehicles around the corner, all of which are changing the way people get around Los Angeles. So the question becomes what to do about those old 1940s era parking regulations.
And the spaces that they free up. So what is your vision about how the city could transform if it began to take on those pieces of land and incorporate them for other uses?
Two things. One is taking that extraordinary inventory that already exists, that 46 square miles, which is doing nothing really for the city right now, and reimagining what could happen there. And we did, second part of the study was sort of to look at what would be the development scenarios. And there, those numbers are pretty amazing. You could develop half of those spaces at the prevailing densities of the surroundings. No, we're not talking about skyscrapers everywhere. And you could house something like 750,000 people. And if you went to full build out, it would be 1.5 million people, new Los Angelinos who could be fitted in here. The other part is, how would new development look if you didn't have to have that ruinous two spaces per unit? And so we took three, to use the architect's word, typologies, three classic Los Angeles scenarios, different parts of the city, different kinds of sites. And we did three, let's say, provocations of how those could be developed with all the benefits you would get if the space does not have to be given over to parking.
And do you think there's an appetite here to pick up on that conversation? It's great that you do this work and you're known for it. How often does that begin to filter into the public debate and what's discussed in city halls?
I do think, and we were sort of charged, and I should make this clear, that this really is a project of Woods Bagot, which has, you know, extraordinary resources both on the design and data side that I would myself never be able to do. They've led the effort. But we were charged precisely by John Resent, the head of this conference, with the mission of saying, well, what would be actionable about this? How would you translate this into policy? And toward that end, we're doing a special workshop this evening where we're inviting a really great cross-section of people from city planners and city officials and real estate lawyers and people from Lyft and Uber and Toyota to say, how would this turn into law? I would add that in Los Angeles, they've had some signal success already a transformation of the city, as almost everyone knows now, is downtown Los Angeles. That was only made possible because the owners of the big, beautiful, old commercial office buildings, the ones you see in all the 1920s movies, were ready to turn them into apartments, but could not do so, inevitably, if they had to make two spaces per unit. Where were they going to put the parking garages? The city zeroed that requirement out, and the result has been 14,000 new units of residential housing in downtown Los Angeles and a new downtown. They're now going to extend it to new construction as well. So they've seen what this idea can do, and it's already, it's not a dream, it's really happening.
And the ambition to make this a walkable, cyclable city, that would become much more achievable if there wasn't these huge gaps in between the building, if you generated corner stores and schools at every turn.
LA has always been funny that way, and because, you know, on the one hand, yes, it is this very sprawling, dispersed place, but much more so than people have in their imaginations. People do walk, and people do go to the corner store, and you do have these marvelous boulevards with all kinds of life and activity on them in some parts of the city. So in one way to think about this is to be encouraging that development and look at all the different ways that that could happen. One extraordinary corollary to the study was looking at what we discovered as being called the $5 to $7 Uber shed. Los Angeles is building this enormous subway system, but unlike London, for example, or New York, where you can likely walk to the station, here you have a problem. It might be a mile away. Well, what if you took a very cheap Uber ride to the station, did the long distance by metro, and then got out at the other side, and it was 2 times 5 a day, $10 a day, metro is $2 or something like that. Well, suddenly the catchment of the metro system explodes. And suddenly this is an interesting way in which cars and transit might work together in a way that nobody had imagined. And of course, down the line, you may get rid of the driver. But for now, we do have Uber working up and working in Lyft as well.
And finally, this city as a laboratory, it's a place of experiment.
Yeah.
You kind of sense it here that they're kind of willing to take some risks and see if things work in a way that many European cities would find it difficult to do. But here there's a feeling, well, come and have a go and we'll see what happens.
Ironically, the very sprawl of the city lends itself to the idea of it being sort of a laboratory. It's also quite important to remember, those of you who are fans of the old cartoon Who Framed Roger Rabbit, that the city was actually built on a streetcar system in the 1930s and 40s. The car was the great newcomer in the 1950s and 60s, and of course they did represent the prototype of the modern highway-driven, freeway-driven tract house development. But that's to say that they've always been, it's been a more malleable place and a more changeable place than people imagine. And I'm thrilled that they have decided that this could be the next step, because it is true that Los Angeles is the city that gave us the model of every other modern city built since World War II. If they begin to change, the exportable quality of that might be very powerful indeed.
That was James Sanders wearing his Woods Bagot hat. Up next, Ed and me test drive a Lime e-scooter, and you'll get to hear how brave and butch we are.
Now, Andrew, I've been trying to get you to get on one of these e-scooters for the last couple of days. I think finally we're going to do it, right?
Well, we've been looking a little bit envious at some of the people as we've kind of gone around the city, kind of whizzing along with them, thinking it could be fun. I'm sort of petrified I'm going to go home with a cast on my leg, but then you can break yours as well. Maybe we could both be hobbling around next week. I think we should have a go.
All right, I can see this Lime e-scooter over here. Let's go try this one then. Can we have a test drive?
Absolutely, we should just like a waiver.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So pull up the kickstand on the left side.
Okay. I'm gonna watch you first, I think.
Okay, Ed. So, here we go. So let me just say, it's quite sturdy, isn't it? It's not light thing.
Yeah.
And
we actually have a test track right here.
Okay, so we're going to go around to the test track. I don't think they trust me yet.
I'm going to bring mine.
We got our brakes, throttle, ringy thingy.
How do you stand on it? That may be a stupid question.
It could be up to your own comfort.
You go straight on.
Skateboard or anything?
But on a skateboard, you go side on.
I like a side.
You're a side saddle man.
I ride Goofy. That's right.
Ed, let me point out, I've never been on a skateboard.
Really?
Start until you give it a kick.
What do you mean? You have to kick it like a horse?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Kick forward, then push the gas.
Whoa!
Oh yeah!
stability in something that's very
you beat me there.
And thin.
Yeah.
You've never been able to keep up. tell me, what is it that makes it so easy to kind of get your mobility on? Because in a way, you think you'd fall off once you kind of like stood in it, but it's got a good balance.
It does. I think it's a combination of the tires and also the suspension.
And how fast does it go?
Right now, we've got it capped at 18 miles per hour.
That's quite quick.
Pretty quick.
I was a little bit nervous on the turn.
Well, I've just been told that it's too narrow for the turn.
It's interesting because there seem to be a lot of startups in this field, all with single word names. You have to have a single word name, right?
It's got to be quick and to the point.
I'm going to come back. You carry on.
Are you going to go for another spin? He's loving it.
This is my new. Oh.
I'm going to have one more spin if I can too. I'm going to beat you this time.
It's been fraught at times, but California, a pioneer in US mobility, is getting high-speed rail. But whereas in the past rail companies would have just been worried about tracks and trains, today the thinking is bigger. What will be the social and economic consequences? How do you work with other mobility players? And what should the stations deliver? Michel Bohm is the Southern California Regional Director for the California High Speed Rail Authority. And she gave me some speedy answers about the project.
The California High Speed Rail Project is an 800-mile electric high speed rail system that will link Northern California to Southern California, specifically San Francisco to Anaheim in phase one, which is about 500 miles of the 800 miles. And then a phase two will go ahead and connect in the north up to Sacramento. And down in Southern California, the phase two would go through the San Gabriel Valley and the Inland Empire and connect in to the San Diego Airport as its southern terminus. Again, this is a renewable energy-based major transportation corridor for the state of California as we're looking forward and thinking about how we address some of our most challenging issues that we face right now, which are jobs, housing, mobility, and then climate change. Certainly, this project becomes really important in a state where today we have 40 million people, and we expect at least 10 million more in the coming decades by the middle of this century.
Joined up thinking in the past, rail operators, they ran trains and they didn't care about anything else. Maybe they had a car park next to the train station. Are you working with all of the other players to think about the mile it takes to get to the station or the 10 miles it takes to get to the station? Are you working with the car companies and the bike companies and all that? Is that all part of the modern way of running a project like yours?
It is absolutely part of the modern way of running a project like ours. And again, we're looking at building a community. And, you know, a lot of times people think about that in terms of density, and density seems scary. But really, if you think about it and contextualize it as building a community and building the living room basically at your doorstep where you have access to all of the things that you need on a regular basis within your life in a different way than you have today, that begins to address first and last mile issues as well. But we are always going to have all of these multi-modes, you know, whether it be the electric scooters or the bikes to the, you know, the on-demand cars, all of those types of features have us look at what we're planning in a different way, right? We really want to plan locations that open their arms to the outside. We have a big history here in the United States for quite some time of building things that closed their arms to the outside. We built houses and we put walls around them, right? We built malls and we enclosed them. And so now this next wave is about how you build it and open it up to the outside. And in doing that, I think that you inherently solve some of the first and last mile issues, but of course you have to plan for them. But ultimately, one of the coolest things you get to think about in this kind of different paradigm, if you would, is the concept of parking and the concept of cars. You know, for decades now, we have essentially built houses for cars, right? We have a garage, so we have a little house at our own homes, if you were able to embrace the suburban dream, right? So we built a house for our car. In downtown, we build large parking areas, so we essentially build houses for cars. If you go to an airport, you see houses for cars. What can we do with that space when our cars no longer need to wait for us in a house, but our cars now are something that in many cases perhaps you don't need because you've rebuilt and rethought the community. But when you need it on demand. And so your cars are working all the time. They don't need to stop during the day. They can go do their work and you can go do your work. How does that help us rethink and reshape our cities? We have all of this underutilized space associated with parking. What do we get to do with it? That's something that's very exciting.
That was Michelle Boehm of the California High-Speed Rail Authority. This is me and you. Oh, you're listening to The Urbanist from LA Commotion. We might not think of them like this, but actually in most cities, public space is actually composed of streets, and understanding the implications of good street design can truly impact the way we move around. As new technologies and varied modes of transport come into the fold, it's important to rethink what makes an ideal city street. Christoph Arno is the CEO of Blue Systems, a company that's trying to bring all these different elements together. He told Ed Stocker about their work in LA.
What we're trying to do is to give tools to cities to better control actually all assets mobile that they are having in a city, so all mobility operators. And the way we're doing it, it's because we are also providing mobility services to the city. And here in LA, and also in London actually, we are operating a pure electric car sharing scheme that works point to point. But the idea is not just only to provide a new car rental service, it's also to try to organize how the people will use them. So in the sense where actually we provide stations where they can take a car, but they are forced to drop the car at another station. And that is to simply force them to park the car at a dedicated and organized area decided by the city, so that the people using the car are not losing their time to find a parking bay. And also, it's from a pure city perspective, the city is not going to see a car being dropped anywhere annoying the sidewalks or annoying the curbside, but it's the undefined area to organize it. And that's kind of solution is defining where the mobility operators can actually end their rental. And when the scooters came very recently in all the cities, that's the main problem. Everybody loved that kind of micro-mobility, but they were just dropping the scooters everywhere, on the road, on the ground, and that was obstructing the sidewalks. It was damaging how looks the city. So it's all about organizing where the people need to park their mobility services, and that's what we are doing with our Blue LA car sharing service. We force the people to have a car from a station where we have agreed with the city that it's the good place to drop the car or to take the car.
And how are the public reacting to that? Because I guess a lot of those car sharings like Zip or whatever function by you being able to pick up on a street near where you live or work, etc. This may involve slightly more effort on the part of the consumer, and are they okay with that?
At the end of the day, they are somehow totally okay. So what we're doing here and in London, actually, we're doing it in different cities. We are in different cities in France, we're in Singapore, we're in Italy, we're in Indianapolis here as well, and we're providing that service. But obviously, to provide a good service, we need to multiply the number of stations. We need to provide a good number of stations across the city so that the people can find easily a car at a walking distance. That's for sure. But then it's also to connect. We were talking this morning about transportation hubs. Locating and connecting the different mobility solution is interesting. Because maybe let's say that where you live, you don't have a car sharing station like we do, but you may have a dock with the bike share. What we can do is actually you can use the bike and then go to the next blue car sharing stations where you have another dock with bikes, for instance. So it's all about complementing the mobility offering in the city, but to have all the service totally connected.
Is it hard to fully integrate something when there are potentially other companies doing different things, but in mobility in a city? So I presume, you know, the end goal would be that there would be full integrity across a whole city. But obviously, I don't know if it's more problematic if you have different players.
So first, it's good to have different players because it means competition. It means a better quality of services, because if someone is doing something really great, everybody will have to align or even think better. So yes, it's a challenge, but actually now the whole city world and transportation offices like LADOT or TfL in London Transport for London, they are now thinking in actually having platform with open API to apt at the end of the day, having the possibility to have different private providers, but using the same basis, the same platform, the same mobility solution. Because at the end of the day, it's not the city that will deliver the mobility service. This need to be organized or managed by the private companies. But it's clear that we need to share all the data to better connect, better integrate it. And this is a big turn that is happening right now. And actually, LADOT and the city of LA are really taking the lead on that. Yesterday, I was attending and presenting what could be the platform in terms of open API so that all mobility service providers will be sharing their data to better integrate what's happening in a city for the benefit of the end customer. And tomorrow, you may have an app, which could be a mobility service app for you, for the end user, and you will be able actually to get into all the different mobility solutions, but with a one-stop shop approach, and pay for a fee that will get you in Uber, a Lyft, the Lime scooter, the Blue LA car sharing, and behind the scene, everything is organized by somehow that's the open source platform.
That was Christophe Arnaud, the CEO of Blue Systems, and he was speaking to Monocle's Ed Stocker. And that's all for this week's episode of The Urbanist. But join me next week for part two of our report from this year's LA Commotion, where we head out to some of the bigger themes. The show was produced by Carlotta Ribello, and it was edited by Christy Evans. And to play you out of this episode of The Urbanist, come on, get on your dance shoes. What else from La La Land? It's City of Stars. Thank you for listening, city lovers.
City of stars, are you shining just for me? City of stars, there's so much that I can't see. Who knows? I felt it from the first embrace I shared with you.
That now our dreams may finally come true. City of stars, just one thing everybody wants. There in the bars and through the smokescreen of the crowded restaurant.